how much money you have or what you look like or where you live. It sounded so simple. Nothing in life was that easy, but what if some things were? What if love was just about two people who were willing to defy all opposing circumstances to be together because they had that much faith in their love? People couldn't choose who they fell for, and oftentimes they fell for people their minds would have never picked. That was probably a good thing. Minds could be manipulated and bodies could be tricked. Hearts and souls, though, they always knew the truth. Nate's thoughts sharpened, crystallized, and it was all he could do not to bang his head against the wall. He'd been stupid for sure. He just hoped it wasn't too late to fix his mistake. "Dad," he said, "let's continue this later. I have to get the woman I love back."
Chapter 23. After driving aimlessly around L.A. for hours, Chris ended up at Marina Del Rey. As far as heartbreak havens went, it was the worst place she could have chosen. This was where she and Nate had sex for the first time. Well, where the boat where they'd had sex for the first time had departed from, anyway. She hadn't made the conscious decision to come here, but something about the water called to her like a homing beacon. Chris curled up on a quiet stretch of boardwalk and watched the boats bob on the waves. They resembled life-sized toys. She wondered vaguely if Nate's friend's boat was in its slip and... what? She was going to take a field trip over there and reminisce about her and Nate's short-lived relationship? Play a cheesy mental montage of her favorite moments set to maudlin music like this was a 1990s Julia Roberts movie? No thanks. To take her mind off Nate, Chris brain-jumped to the other male-centered shit show in her life. Apparently, she was a glutton for punishment.
"I gave you a chance."
Roger's face was cold with fury.
"I'd hoped you would make more of an effort with Gloria, considering she'll be your stepmother soon. Instead, you set out to destroy something you knew was important to me. How could you, Chris?"
Her contract with Nate waved in the air, flimsy but damning as hell. Chris stared ahead in mutinous silence. Gloria's lips had curved into a smug smirk behind Roger's back. But Chris didn't bother calling her out on it. What was the point? The proverbial shit had already hit the fan.
"Well?"
An undercurrent of hurt flashed before Roger's anger swallowed it whole.
"Do you have anything to say for yourself?"
She forced herself to breathe through her nose. She would not lose her cool. "I don't regret it," she said flatly. "Gloria is a gold-digging bitch. She would have cheated on you, you know. If you hadn't arrived when you did, she would have met Nate at a hotel. She'd already agreed to it." "She's lying," Gloria's voice rang with false indignation. "I would never cheat on you, Roger. And did you hear what she just called me?"
"Quiet,"
Roger thundered. The step monster shut up and glared at Chris, who ignored her. For now.
"Do you have any proof of your accusations?"
Her father asked in the same icy tone he used to cut down his business opponents. Chris didn't, and they all knew it. If she had, she would have brought it to him already. She lifted her chin in defiance. "You have your daughter's word." Deafening silence.
"You gave me your word you would try this summer," Roger finally said. "Instead, you got fired from your job. Threw away $15,000, hiring an actor to break up my engagement, and entered into a relationship with said actor who's used to..."
He paused.
"Needless to say, your word isn't worth much to me right now. From this moment forward, you're cut off. Indefinitely. No credit cards, no access to your bank accounts. I'll also be calling the lawyers tomorrow to adjust the terms of your trust fund. Clearly, you haven't learned how to control your spending, to say nothing of your scheme to frame Gloria for infidelity."
Moisture gathered in Chris's eyes. But she would not, could not cry. Not here. in front of the gloating stepmonster. She didn't bother trying to convince her father Gloria had been planning to cheat on him, or how evil his fiancée was to her when he wasn't looking. He wouldn't believe her anyway. "Fine," Chris said, steel masking the tremble in her voice. "You caught me. I hired someone to break you and Gloria up because I hate her. You can cut me off all you want, but I will never consider her part of this family." Disappointment settled into every groove of Roger's face.
"Then perhaps you shouldn't be part of this family at all."
Something warm and salty trickled down Chris's cheek. She swiped it away with the back of her hand. Her blowout with her father over the contract had been bad enough. Then she found out about dear old Dad's bribe. She'd snuck into his office while he and Gloria enjoyed the oh-so-harmonious sounds of the L.A. Philharmonic at the Hollywood Bowl last night. Unsure what she was looking for, but determined to find something that could bring Gloria down. It was only fair. Gloria must have snooped around in Chris's room while Chris was out and found the contract buried in an old Jimmy Choo shoebox in the closet. Chris had already searched her father and Gloria's suite. No dice. Her father's study was the next best bet. No one went in there except Roger, which made it the perfect hiding spot. Unfortunately, Chris hadn't found anything of the step monsters. She had, however, stumbled on, irony of all ironies, a contract her father had drawn up, stipulating Nate would receive $50,000 upon the termination of his relationship with Chris. Date of contract? The night of the dinner party. AKA, the night before Nate broke up with her. Chris had been too shocked and devastated to check if Nate's signature had been on the document. But the timing had aligned perfectly. When she'd went to his house that morning, she'd known how much his father offered him, but she wanted to hear him say it. Wanted him to admit how much he thought their relationship was worth. Funny. A Carrera contract had started it all. And a Carrera contract had ended it all. Or so she thought.
"I swear on my mother's grave that I didn't accept a cent from him. But some of the things he said made sense. Like how we're from different worlds, and how we don't fit."
Chris squeezed her eyes shut, to no avail. Memories of Nate's voice, face, and presence consumed her. So vivid he might as well be standing before her. She could even smell... Her eyes popped open. Nope. The delicious scent hadn't been her imagination. Nate was really here. His big body blocking the sun. His face cast in shadow. Then he stepped forward, and she could see his red-rimmed eyes and tense jaw.
"You're here."
Relief drenched his features, brightening his otherwise weary expression. Chris tensed. "How'd you find me?"
"Educated guess. During our night on the boat, you mentioned how much you liked being by the water and how it calmed you. I went to the slip first, but you weren't there, so I just kind of walked around until I found you."
"You walked around the entire harbor until you found me? What if I hadn't been here?" Chris asked, disbelieving.
A sheepish shrug. "Then I would have wasted a lot of time, but I had a sense you were here. And you are. Guess the soul knows what it's doing."
"What?"
"Never mind."
Red stained Nate's cheeks. She shook her head. "Whatever. I told you back at the house that..."
"You love me."
Her cheeks flushed to match his. "No, I said I was done. And I meant it."
"Yes, but you also said you love me."
He was insufferable. "It doesn't matter." Chris scrambled to her feet, a wave of dizziness overtaking her at the sudden movement. She paused and blinked away the wooziness before continuing. "We're already broken up, remember? We're not the right fit. We're H&M and Hermes, Gap and Gucci, Forever 21 and Fendi. You made your point, now leave me alone."
"No."
She was this close to tearing her hair out in frustration, but Kenji, her stylist in Seattle, would kill her.
Then what the hell do you want?
Nate looked her straight in the eye.
I want you.
He had to be joking. Don't get excited, you floozy, she told her foolish, no sense of self-preservation heart, which had perked up at Nate's words like a golden retriever who'd spotted its owner for the first time after months apart. Or did you forget there are still pieces of you lying around L.A., courtesy of the jerk you love so much? Are you kidding me? Chris planted her hands on her hips. You gave your little different world spiel just a few hours ago, and now you want me again? Make up your damn mind.
I've always wanted you.
Nate didn't back down from the force of her fury, and a tiny seed of respect sprouted in her stomach. This was the man she'd fallen in love with. The one who gave as good as he got, who was kind and understanding, but wouldn't hesitate to call someone, aka her, out on their bullshit.
But I haven't been totally honest about what happened with your father.
The opening salvo of a migraine attack set in. Chris pinched her temple and reminded herself to take deep breaths. Tell me. It wasn't a request. And Nate's reply was a 15-kiloton nuclear bombshell. He told her about his family's rash of bad luck 2 years ago. Multiple home repairs needed, car breakdowns, a workplace injury that put Michael out of commission for 2 months, that sent them into particularly dire financial straits. Nate's income hadn't been enough to cover all their expenses, and he'd been desperate. So when a now ex-friend of his that he'd met through acting dropped hints about a side gig that would pay enough to take care of Nate's short-term money problems, he jumped at the opportunity. Said side gig was escorting and providing Beverly Hills rich, bored, and sexually unsatisfied with whatever they needed. Dates to fancy events for those who were unattached. Company and a listening ear for those who were lonely. Physical pleasures for those whose husbands either neglected them or couldn't get it up without a healthy dose of Viagra. Turned out, Linda, Teague's newish stepmother, fell into the former category. She'd been dating Stephen, Teague's father, but he'd been so caught up with work that she'd felt lonely and overlooked. So she'd sought other male company, specifically Nate, who got the shock of his life when he saw her at Roger's dinner party. She asked him to keep their past indiscretion a secret. Roger overheard and subsequently brought Nate into his office where he'd made his five-figure offer. Chris realized that given the timeline and the fact that the contract had already been drawn, Roger must have decided he wanted Nate out of Chris's life before he learned about Nate's past as an escort.
I never had an actual intercourse with Linda or any of my other clients,
Nate said, his cheeks brick red.
But we did other stuff. I tried to avoid potential clients who were married, but obviously I didn't have a way of verifying the relationship status. It wasn't through an agency either. It was more of an independent thing set up by my friend, ex-friend, and a couple of acquaintances of his. Anyway, that's the full story. I want you to know before you judge your father too harshly for what he did. Hell, I wouldn't want a daughter of mine dating someone like me either. There's nothing wrong with sex work, but when it's your kid. Nate cleared his throat. You were right. I had a shit ton of insecurities about who I am, what I did, whether I deserve you. I still do. That's why I let your dad get to me. And why I ended things between us. But someone gave me the kick in the ass I needed and reminded me that things like money and distance and past mistakes are nothing compared to love. So yeah, here I am, rambling like an idiot for the past 10 minutes without getting to the point, which is that I love you. Hold a boombox over my head, write you a letter every day for years, love you. And I'm sorry I've been too much of a coward to own up to it until now. I want to be with you in any way I can. And if that means living in different cities, or turning down 50 grand, or working through my fear of flying so I can see you more often, I'll do it. I'd do anything for you.
Chris stared at Nate, her mind racing a million miles a minute as it tried to keep up with all the new information thrown at her, while her heart danced like a maniac at Nate's confession. Say something. Anything. Nothing came out.
Unless it's too late,
Nate said, his voice cracking.
Which I understand. I really fucked things up. Or if the escort thing is too much, I understand that too. But I wanted you to know before you left. See if maybe...
He trailed off. Chris's silence hung heavy in the air, muffling the other sounds from the marina. She wanted to move and speak, but something held her in place, trapping her emotions in a glass bottle until they screamed for release. The flare of hope in Nate's eyes dimmed the longer she stayed quiet, until it snuffed out completely.
Anyway, yeah.
He took an awkward step back and avoided her eyes.
That's what I wanted to say, but I won't bother you any longer.
A pause. Then his shoulders slumped, and he walked away, his tall, powerful frame cutting a dejected figure against the bustling marina. Maybe it was the sight of Nate leaving that triggered the release valve on Chris's emotions. Or maybe her brain had finally caught up with her heart. Whatever it was, she broke free of the strange paralysis that had gripped her from the moment Nate started speaking and ran after him. It was the first time she'd run in years. She was more of a yoga and Pilates person. All the perspiration that came from pounding the pavement beneath a scorching sun, no thanks. But now, she didn't think twice of putting her Manolo Blahniks through their paces until she passed Nate and spun around, blocking him from walking any further. A frown marred his forehead.
What?
He didn't get a chance to ask the rest of his question before Chris grabbed him and kissed him. If she had any doubts about whether this was the right thing to do, given everything that had happened over the past 2 weeks, the kiss confirmed it. It abso-freaking-lutely was. Their mouths moved against each other, softly at first, and then with a heated passion that stole the breath from her lungs. Chris greedily drank him in, her blood pumping at the taste and feel of him, richer than any wine, headier than any drug. It seemed love imbued embraces with a special magic, because she would have floated right off the ground if Nate's strong arms hadn't anchored her to the earth. When they finally broke apart, she couldn't help but laugh at the dazed shock on his face. I should have made you work harder for it after that bull you pulled the night after the Mentor Gala and this morning, she said. But you're right. We've already wasted so much time. And I don't want to waste any more playing games. Your past as an escort doesn't affect my feelings for you in the slightest. No, scratch that. It makes me love you more because you care about your family so much. And you're so strong and brave and resilient. You did what you had to do, and you should not feel ashamed about it, ever. Emotion clogged Chris's throat, and her chest pinched when she thought about everything Nate had gone through. His mother's death, his father's battle with alcoholism, the things he'd had to do to keep his family afloat. It made Chris's problems seem trivial in comparison, and she felt like a spoiled, whiny brat for complaining about her father's love life and her money problems. So what if Gloria was a gold digger? She wasn't the first, and she wouldn't be the last. Chris had done what she could to make her father see the light, but he was a grown man. It was his life. And he had to learn his own lessons. If he and Gloria stayed married until they were both gray of hair, great. If Gloria left him after a few years and took half of everything he owned, it wouldn't be the end of the world. 50% of the Carrera fortune was still a lot. And Roger would bounce back. He hadn't climbed his way to the top of the cutthroat corporate world because he couldn't handle adversity. And Gloria was nothing compared to hostile takeover attempts and crooked business partners. Chris was done trying to meddle in her father's life and battling with the step monster, who so didn't deserve her energy. Let them do what they wanted. As for her financial situation, she'd figure that out later. Right now, all that mattered was her and Nate. Nate exhaled a gust of relief at her words.
"You're amazing," he said hoarsely, cupping her face with his hands. "I can't believe I was lucky enough to find you."
"That's the other way around." They were veering dangerously close to cheesy rom-com territory, but who cared? Nate was her harbor in the storm, her anchor in all the insanity, and she wanted him to know, in no uncertain terms, what he meant to her. "I love you." Damn it, she was going to cry. In public, no less.
"I love you too. So freaking much."
Nate brushed a strand of hair out of her eye before he kissed her. Slow, sweet, tender. Whatever remained of the walls around Chris's heart crumbled into ashes, carried away by the butterflies soaring in her chest. In that moment, she didn't care that she only had a few thousand dollars to her name, and that her father may or may not have disowned her. She had everything that mattered, and it was perfect.
"Have you broken up with Tegan? If you haven't, I'll do it for you,"
Nate mumbled into her hair sometime later. His hold tightened possessively around her waist.
"With my fists."
She huffed out a laugh. "We never dated."
"But it's Sky's game."
"I lied. You were being such an ass, and I wanted to get to you." Pure, unadulterated relief spread across Nate's features.
"I deserve that."
"Yep," she confirmed. "Don't worry, I lied about the kissing part too." She tapped him on the mouth. "You're the best kisser I've ever had." Smugness saturated Nate's resulting grin.
"Damn right I am."
And he kissed her again to prove it. Chris and Nate stayed at the marina for a while longer, watching the boats go by and discussing what would happen next. Chris had 2 weeks left in LA, after which they'd go long distance. Lots of phone calls and Skype. As much flying back and forth between California and Seattle as they could manage. Luckily, it was only a couple hours flight, and tickets for that route weren't too expensive. Now that Chris didn't have access to her bank accounts or credit cards, she was also limited in how much money she could shell out on non-essentials. Plus, they agreed to be honest and tell the other upfront if something wasn't working. Communication was important for all relationships, but it was crucial for long-distance ones. By the time they finished hashing things out and kissed some more, and grabbed a late lunch and kissed some more, the sun hung low in the sky, and a slight evening chill rippled through the air.
"So,"
Nate flashed a crooked smile as they meandered down the walkway running parallel to the water.
"Think it's time for another of our classic seal-the-deal nights?"
Chris laughed. "How long have you been holding that in?"
"Only since the first time you kissed me today."
"That long, huh?" She tangled her fingers with his, enjoying the warm strength of his hand in hers. They'd agreed not to hold hands earlier in the summer because it was too cheesy. But what do you know? She had a thing for Brie and Gruyere. Judging by Nate's squeeze, he did too. "I do love a good seal the deal." Their night on the boat would forever remain one of her top three spank bang fantasies. "We have to do it at your house, though. I can't go home right now." A wave of sadness crested over her. Chris and her father had never been that close, but he was her only parent left. While they weren't estranged, their relationship was at its lowest point in 21 years. and she couldn't bear to look at his face right now. It hurt too much. Even being in the same house as him these past few days had been unbearable. Nate's mouth tightened with concern.
How are things with your dad? I don't want to be the reason you two have a falling out.
Too late. She fiddled with her handbag strap. We already fell out. He found out about our Gloria contract.
Shit. Nate winced. How'd he find out?
I'm guessing Gloria snooped around my room and found the contract. It doesn't matter. He knows and he's pissed. More pissed than I've ever seen him. He didn't believe me when I told him Gloria had been ready to cheat on him with you, and he cut me off. He even froze my trust fund.
I'll talk to him. Back up what you said about Gloria.
No, Chris shook her head. I appreciate the offer, but he won't believe you either. You and Gloria only had a verbal agreement, right? She was too smart to leave a text trail, and you're not exactly my father's favorite person on the planet.
I suppose you're right, Nate said reluctantly. But what are you gonna do about Gloria and money?
I'm done with Gloria. I don't want to waste my time and energy plotting against her. She's not worth it. As for money, I'd withdrawn a couple thousand in cash before my father froze my accounts. It should last me until I return to campus, where my tuition and board are already paid for. I was going to rent a cheap Airbnb or something until I leave LA and maybe find a short-term gig so I can bulk up my finances. Chris frowned. I'm not sure anyone will hire me for only 2 weeks, but it's worth a shot. I don't want to be under the same roof as my dad and Gloria right now. Nate was quiet for a minute.
I may have a solution to both your short-term problems, he said slowly. I'll have to double-check, but we could use an extra hand at the cafe, especially since one of the regular servers sprained her ankle and is on leave until she can get back on her feet. Elijah's dad owns the cafe, and I know him well, so it shouldn't be an issue, but I can confirm Monday. As for the housing situation, he rubbed the back of his neck, looking nervous. I don't want this to be awkward or rush things, but you can move in with me until you leave.
Chris's breath stuttered. What? Pink tinged Nate's cheekbones.
That's not a big deal. Sky would love to have you around more, and I'm sure my dad would be chill with it once we explain the situation to him. He's, the one who kicked my ass this morning for letting you go.
That was a legit shocker, but it must mean Nate's relationship with his father was improving. Although her own familial bonds were fraying, Chris was genuinely happy for Nate. He deserved peace in his home life.
It's only for 2 weeks, Nate continued. We're not signing a lease together or anything. I don't want you to feel like I'm pressuring you into something you're not ready for. I just hate the thought of you living alone in some random place in the city, especially since the cheapest apartments are in areas that aren't great for single females. And I don't want you to waste money on an Airbnb or hotel when there's room in my house.
I appreciate that. Really, Chris said, fighting back emotion. When was the last time someone had looked out for her like this? Not because they'd been paid to do so, but because they cared. Never. But I can't impose.
You won't be imposing. I want you there. Nate rubbed his thumb over the back of her hand. You don't have to decide now. Just think about it.
Chris wanted to say yes more than anything. Living with Nate meant more time together, and they needed every second they could get. But she didn't feel right taking advantage of the Reynolds' hospitality, eating their food, and using their utilities when they were already struggling. Maybe she could pay rent or help around the house? Questions for another day. Chris was too exhausted to think clearly right now. I will. She pressed her lips against Nate's, grateful beyond measure that she had him by her side. In the meantime, where did you park your car? I don't think I can wait until we get back to your house for our second seal the deal. Chapter 24. One large no-foam latte, half skim, half whole milk with split quad shots, 2 shots decaf, 2 shots regular, 2 packets of Splenda, and 4 small sprinkles of cinnamon. 1 avocado toast with the toast slightly burnt at the corners, and exactly 1 avocado's worth of topping. No egg, extra chili flakes, and a medium sprinkling of salt. Oh, and 1 blueberry muffin with not too many blueberries. Or too few. The bleached blonde rattled off her order in one breath without looking up from her phone. Chris's eye twitched. In her 4 days as a server at Alchemy, she'd received some balls-to-the-wall orders, but this one took the cake. What was the point of putting skim and whole milk in your coffee? To say nothing of the other arbitrary stipulations. How about I add 3 shots of spit to your ridiculous latte and you shove it up your ass? Chris opened her mouth to say just that before she caught Nate's subtle headshake out of the corner of her eye. He knew her well enough by now to catch her before she reamed a customer out. She took a deep breath and forced a tight smile. You got it. She rang up the blonde's order and started working on the latte. Out of spite, she used all whole milk and left out the skim. It was petty, but Chris never claimed to be a saint. It wasn't like the woman would taste the difference. Chris was pretty sure people came up with these ridiculous orders just to make baristas' lives miserable. After less than a week dealing with this kind of bullshit, she had a healthy, newfound appreciation for those who worked in the service industry. The adage, the customer is always right, was so freaking wrong. I'm impressed. Nate reached across her for the vanilla syrup, his forearm brushing against her chest as he did so. Heat sizzled in her veins, and she side-eyed him, certain he'd done that on purpose. The twinkle in his eyes confirmed her suspicion. I thought you were going to tear her a new one. I wanted to. Chris added the cinnamon sprinkles. But Liza is still pissy about the time I called out that asshole for lying about his order. The jerk had sent his burger back 3 times, claiming it was too rare, too well done, too salty, though he'd miraculously scarfed down half his food each time before Chris lost her shit. The jerk lost his shit over her losing her shit, and the cafe manager lost her shit over the entire situation. So yeah. Chris was already on thin ice. She wouldn't have cared, except Nate had recommended her for the temp position, and she didn't want to get him in trouble. She may be leaving for Seattle soon, but he depended on this job. He'd talked to Elijah's father on Monday, and she'd started work Tuesday morning. Liza, the manager, hadn't been thrilled about taking on someone with 0 service experience, but Chris was decent at her job. Unless the person on the other side of the counter was a jerk. She was still learning the ropes on the whole customer service thing. Chris plucked a blueberry muffin from the pastry case and dropped it onto a small plate. It was late Friday afternoon, and the cafe's earlier craziness had died down to a manageable 4 tables plus the occasional takeout order. Thank God. She was looking forward to a long, hot shower, followed by a longer, hotter session between the sheets. She'd officially moved into the Reynolds house the same day she started at Alchemy. As Nate had predicted, his family welcomed her with open arms, and, in Skylar's case, a hug and a squeal that they probably heard across the Atlantic. Nate had offered to sleep on the pull-out couch in the living room during her stay, but she'd shut that down quick. She didn't want to displace him from his room. He wouldn't let her sleep on the couch either, so they shared his bed. No one said anything about the sleeping arrangements. Nate and Chris were adults in a relationship, and Michael and Skylar weren't idiots. They had to know that if a couple lived under the same roof, there'd be shenanigans, even though Chris tried her best to be quiet. She'd also convinced Nate to accept rent for housing her until she left L.A. He'd refused at first, but caved after she made it a non-negotiable for her moving in. Once he did, she packed her bags, slapped a quick note on her nightstand for Risa or whoever to find, and split. She wasn't sure why she'd bothered with the note at all. Her father hadn't reached out to her once since she walked out of their big, cold Beverly Hills mansion.
I'm still impressed by your restraint,
Nate leaned down to whisper in her ear.
Remind me to show you just how impressed I am when we get home.
Chris almost spilled the piping hot latte on herself. You're incorrigible, she said, but she was grinning. This was the best part of the job. Whenever she and Nate had the same shift, it was like an extended foreplay session. He didn't even have to touch her to turn her on.
I try my best,
Nate drawled, before a new customer snagged his attention.
You two are disgustingly coupley.
This came from Elijah. Chris had stopped calling him Blue Hair, partly because Nate had asked her to, and partly because Elijah had re-dyed his hair a hot pink, who returned from his trip to the bathroom with a carton of oat milk to replace the empty one sitting on the counter.
This is a professional workplace.
Please, don't think I don't know what you do in the employee bathroom during your break. Chris kept her voice low so only Elijah could hear her. His jaw dropped. Paired with his fuchsia hair, it made him look like a surprised anime character.
Come on, Chris, you know I was joking, he complained. Why you gotta call me out like that?
I wasn't calling you out. Chris glanced at the open window looking into the kitchen just as the cook slid an avocado toast sans egg onto the ledge. The orders from the computerized register fed straight into an electronic screen in the kitchen, eliminating the need for staff to run back and forth. That would be unprofessional, and I'm such a nice coworker, she flashed a sweet smile. Elijah stepped back.
Don't do that. You freak me out when you act all nice and innocent.
Good. Now get out of my way. I have an order to fill. Relief spread across the pink-haired boy's face.
That's more like it.
Chris's amusement faded when she carried the food out to the blonde, who peered at her coffee and demanded to know why there wasn't more cinnamon.
When I say four small sprinkles, I mean four, not three, not three and a half, four, and the coffee's cold.
The blonde pushed the mug away like it was a dead rodent.
Remake it.
Really? Let's see how cold it is when I throw it all over you. Chris drew in a deep breath. Of course, she said through gritted teeth. Her hand trembled with rage as she took the latte back to the counter. Some liquid spilled over the side and pooled on the small saucer plate.
I can make it, Nate said, surmising what had happened in 0.5 seconds when he saw the coffee and Chris's face. I'll bring it out to her, too.
No, I'll do it, Chris bared her teeth. I'll add a special seasoning.
That's what I'm afraid of. He took the mug from her and nudged her toward the register. I got in, seriously.
She relented, mainly because Nate was already making a new latte. How do you do it? She asked, watching him pull the decaf espresso shots first. All these terrible customers all the time.
Not all the time. Some are great. Most are neutral. They come in, pay, get out.
Nate pulled the regular shots next.
There'll always be shitty people who look down on you or blame you when something goes wrong because you're the easiest target. But that's expected when you work in the service industry. You just gotta put up with it, especially since waiters depend on tips for a living.
Chris's brows drew together. She'd always known that being a service worker was no walk in the park. But there was a difference between abstract knowledge and firsthand experience. Her stomach clenched when she thought about how much shit Nate, Elijah, and the rest of the staff at Alchemy had to put up with regularly. Even though Chris was also a waitress at the moment, she had an out. Sure, she was cut off from her funds, but her family was still rich, and her dad would eventually forgive her. She was his only daughter. And if she turned on the charm and remorse, she could get him to relent. She just didn't want to, because she was pissed at him. Chris had the privilege of walking away from this job whenever she wanted, but most service workers didn't. She could lash out at customers because their tips didn't mean much to her in the long run.
though they helped her chip in for groceries and rent during her extended stay at the Reynoldses. But for some people, tips meant the difference between putting food on the table and starving. That meant they had to put up with even the shittiest of bullshit from the shittiest of customers. She watched Nate take the latte to the bleached blonde, who examined it with a critical eye before she deemed it worthy of drinking. "You're a saint," Chris said when Nate returned to the counter. A wicked smile slashed across his face. "I enjoy sinning far too much to be a saint." "Really?" She leaned against the counter and positioned her body in a way that showed off her curves. She suppressed a smile when heat flared in Nate's eyes. "I don't believe you. You'll have to prove it."
"Oh, I will."
Nate lowered his head so he could whisper right in her ear.
"Starting in an hour, when the cafe closes, and I have you bent over the table in the back room with my cock buried in your tight little pussy."
Heat bloomed in Chris's chest and spread through her limbs, and she had to clench her thighs against the rush of moisture flooding between her legs. Nate's filthy talk had ruined more than one good pair of underwear. His green eyes gleamed with a mixture of heat and amusement at the flush on her cheeks and chest.
"New customer," he said in a normal voice. "We'll pick this up later."
Great. Now Chris was going to be turned on and squirming for the next, she checked the clock, 56 minutes. More if you counted the time it took for Elijah to vacate the premises. Thankfully, he was the only other person on shift this afternoon. Chris's clothes already felt too tight and scratchy against her sensitized skin. "I'm going to get you back for this," she mouthed at Nate. Nate, the sexy, infuriating bastard, merely chuckled in response. Chris fiddled with her bracelet and tried to push the dirty images of what would happen in the back room in an hour out of her mind. The last thing she needed was to fucking moan in the middle of a coffee order. She faced the new customer, bracing herself for another ridiculous drink order. But her shoulders relaxed when she saw who it was. "Hey, Gemma," she said. "What can I get you?" Gemma smiled. She was the regular Chris had spotted at the cafe throughout the summer. And though they hadn't talked much before, they'd struck up an easy camaraderie since Chris started working at Alchemy. Sometimes, when Nate wasn't on shift, and Gemma was the only person here during the slow after-lunch hours, Chris would swing by her table and chat about random things. Books, movies, Gemma's cat, Smokey, the abomination that was skim milk, to alleviate her boredom. To her surprise, Chris enjoyed talking with Gemma. The other woman was warm and friendly. Coincidentally, she was also Filipino, which Chris had learned when Gemma mentioned having family in Cebu. Chris was a third-generation Filipino-American. Her grandparents had immigrated to America after the passage of the 1965 Immigration Act, abolishing quotas based on national origin. And honestly, wasn't that in tune with her heritage, even though there was a large number of Filipino-Americans in Seattle. Her father didn't observe the same traditions her grandparents, both of whom passed away when Chris was a child, had. And though he spoke Tagalog, he'd never made teaching Chris the language a priority. The few Tagalog words Chris did know, she'd learned from Rosa, and now Gemma, who'd taken to playfully teaching her a new word or two every time they spoke. "Hi, Chris." Gemma's eyes crinkled in a smile. "Just a small chai latte to go today." "Sure," Chris rang her up. If only all customers were like Gemma. "How are you?" the other woman asked as Chris started making the drink. "Good. Hanging in there. Other than the fact I'm not speaking to my father, and he's going to marry the step monster in a few months. Oh, and I'm broke and will have to leave the guy I love in 1 week. To add insult to injury, the heel on my favorite pair of Louboutins snapped the other day, and I don't have enough money to fix it, much less buy a new pair." Chris said none of this out loud. As much as she liked Gemma, she was not in the business of spilling personal details to anyone outside her small, tight circle of trusted friends. which currently consisted of Nate, Courtney, and Kenji, her hairstylist in Seattle. Sometimes she talked to Farah, Olivia, and Sammy, but they were still relatively new friends compared to her years-long friendship with Courtney and Kenji. And she wasn't in love with them, which was the only way to bypass the history requirement. Gemma's eyes darkened with concern. "Forgive me if I'm overstepping," she said softly. "But are you having issues at home?" Chris's hand stilled. "What makes you think that?" The older woman hesitated. "I can tell you come from a well-off background, but now you're working here. I'm sorry, it's inappropriate of me to even bring it up. But I just want to make sure everything is okay. We all go through tough times, and I want to help." Suspicion oozed into Chris's veins. Why would someone she barely knew want to help her? She and Gemma hadn't exchanged more than a few words before this week. And while they'd clicked instantly, they weren't close by any means. Not to mention, Gemma was asking awfully personal questions. Then again, Gemma seemed like the type of person who'd feed the homeless and adopt stray animals in her free time. If Chris remembered correctly, she'd rescued her cat Smokey after finding it injured and abandoned on the side of the road. Chris, however, was no stray animal, nor was she a charity case. She was about to tell Gemma so when the bells above the door jangled. Chris's gaze skimmed over the newcomer before his identity registered in her brain. When it did, her eyes snapped back to the man and her jaw dropped. "Daddy?" Roger looked uncharacteristically rumpled in jeans and a white shirt that needed a good ironing. ASAP. Chris couldn't remember the last time she'd seen her father in jeans. There were circles under his eyes, and his skin appeared pale and sallow beneath his tan. How the hell did he know where she was? Or was this just coincidence? If so, it was a hell of a coincidence. Gemma and Nate both stiffened. Nate's discomfort, Chris understood. But why did Gemma look like she was about to throw up?
"Chris, you're here."
Relief cooled the tension lining Roger's face. "Yeah? Question is, what are you doing here?" Her defensiveness kicked in before she could stop it. She was still smarting from the way her father had dismissed her. Sure, Chris's scheme to frame Gloria for infidelity had been shady, but she'd been right. Shouldn't Roger have at least trusted her enough to investigate her claims instead of immediately assuming she'd lied? Chris was related to him by blood. Gloria had appeared on the scene less than 2 years ago. Nate placed a steadying hand on the small of her back, and Chris leaned into his embrace, grateful for the support.
"I need to talk to you. A lot is..."
Roger stopped and stared at Gemma, who turned her face away and was inching toward the door like she hoped she could escape before anyone realized she was still there. Chris didn't think it was possible, but her father paled even more.
"Gemma?"
The name came out as a strangled whisper. Shock slammed into Chris. Her eyes ping-ponged between her father and the woman she'd befriended over the past few days. They knew each other? Gemma's shoulders slumped in resignation. "Roger," she said.
"I can't believe it."
Roger looked stunned.
"You... how?"
"You know each other?" Chris was dimly aware that everyone in the cafe had stopped what they were doing to watch the unfolding drama, but she couldn't bring herself to care. "How?" Gemma stared at her feet, her cheeks crimson, and her knuckles white around her to-go coffee cup.
She's your aunt,"
Roger said, his face so white he resembled a ghost.
"She died 22 years ago."
Chapter 25. This was awkward as hell. Nate shifted in his seat, wishing he drank. He could use a bottle of vodka, or three. Nate, Chris, Roger, and Gemma sat crammed into a tiny booth at a Chinese restaurant near Alchemy. They'd driven here after the cafe closed because, clearly, they had a lot to discuss. Well, Chris, Roger, and Gemma did. Nate was here for moral support, even though he'd rather be in the seventh circle of hell. That would probably be less uncomfortable. Not only did Roger keep glaring at him like he was the devil himself, but Nate felt like the worst kind of intruder on an intimate family matter. But Chris had asked him to stay, so here he was. He'd do anything for her, including subject himself to silent torture by girlfriend's father, a.k.a. the modern equivalent of getting drawn and quartered. Nate chugged his tiny ceramic cup of oolong tea while Gemma explained why she was not, in fact, dead.
"I did get into a terrible motor accident," she admitted, tracing the rim of her teacup with her finger. Her hand trembled, betraying her emotions despite her even tone. "I was pretty banged up and had to stay in the hospital for weeks. I was visiting my cousin in Quezon, and I told her..."
Gemma took a deep breath.
"I told her to lie and say I'd died. I used my savings and bribed the hospital staff to lie as well and to fake the paperwork. Bribery is unfortunately common in the Philippines, in case anyone came asking."
"Why?" White lines of tension bracketed Roger's mouth. "Do you know how devastated your family was? Your parents, Mariana, and I..." He clenched his jaw and repeated, "Why?"
"To escape Ernesto. My husband at the time," Gemma explained. Her eyes shone with pain and regret. "He wasn't a good husband, to say the least. He was 20 years older than me and had a temper, but I married him because he earned a decent living and my family thought he'd be able to take care of me. None of us knew what he was really like until after we married. Then it was like a light switch flipped. He became abusive and lost it over the smallest things. My only relief was that he traveled a lot for work, so I wouldn't see him for days at a time. It was during one of those trips that I fled to my cousin's without telling him. I'd planned on running away, but I knew Ernesto was not the type to give up, especially if his pride was at stake. And he'd greased the palms of so many local officials and police, I was afraid he'd succeed at finding me. The only way to get him off my trail was to fake my death."
Gemma tucked a strand of hair behind her ear. Her hands shook harder.
"It seems extreme. But I was also panicking because..."
She swallowed hard.
"Because Ernesto found out the truth about a secret I'd been hiding right before he left for his trip. He beat me so hard I cracked a rib and fractured my cheekbone."
"Jesus." Roger flinched, his face white, and Nate instinctively reached for Chris's hand. She squeezed hard, tension radiating from her in waves. She hadn't moved an inch since Gemma started talking. He didn't blame her. It was a ton to take in less than an hour.
"The truth about what?"
Chris asked, voice strained. Gemma answered the question but didn't take her eyes off Roger, who looked like he was about to upchuck on his side of the table.
"About us."
Nate's eyes traveled from Gemma to Roger. A thick rope of tension twisted between them, the type that only existed between lovers, or ex-lovers. "Holy shit." "You should have told me," Roger whispered, sounding agonized.
"I would have helped. I would have..." "No,"
Gemma shook her head.
"You were already married to Mariana. She was getting ready to move to the States. I couldn't ask her to do more for us, not when she'd already done so much."
"Damn it, Gemma, she was your sister. She loved you. Roger drew in a shaky breath. "No wonder you never let us visit you."
"Wait."
Chris's grip on Nate's hand tightened further.
"You two had an affair behind my mom's back?"
Nate poured himself another cup of oolong with his free hand. Forget vodka. He would sell his left ball sack for a shitty IPA right now. Anything to take the sting out of this surreal conversation. "Not exactly. Sort of." Roger rubbed a hand over his face. "I mean,
My parents, your grandparents, were friends with your mom and Gemma's parents before they emigrated to the States. Our two families had always planned on me marrying Mariana. It wasn't an arranged marriage per se, because nothing had been formalized, but I still felt obligated to go to Cebu and meet Mariana when the time came. I liked her, could maybe see myself starting a family with her. But when I met Gemma, his face softened. I fell in love.
By that time, I was already engaged to Ernesto, even though I'd only met him twice, Gemma added, addressing Chris. Your father and I, we didn't do more than talk and spend time with each other. I fell in love with him, too. But with my engagement and our families already making plans for his and Mariana's wedding, she sighed. Plus, my mom was sick. Really sick. And that added to the urgency. She wanted to see both her daughters married before she passed, so we stuck to our original plans. But your father and I secretly met a few days before he officially proposed, knowing it'd be our last time alone together, and we...
Gemma sighed.
We shouldn't have done it. It was wrong. I was promised to another, and he was all but promised to my sister. But we did.
I don't regret it, Roger said. Gemma paled.
Roger!
No, Chris's father's eyes flashed. We both know Mariana didn't love me. She married me because your family wanted her to, and because she wanted to move to the States. If she'd felt anything, she wouldn't have been so cold when she learned about the pregnancy. By now, Chris was gripping Nate's hand so tight she cut off his circulation. He barely noticed he was so caught up in Gemma and Roger's story.
What pregnancy?
Chris choked out. Gemma shook her head frantically.
Don't!
Panic imbued her voice, along with a hint of defeat. Roger's jaw hardened. Mariana and Gemma got pregnant around the same time, soon after they married. Siblings aren't supposed to marry in the same year because it's considered bad luck in the Philippines, but with your grandmother's health fading fast, there wasn't much we could do. I'd held off on returning to the States because of Mariana's pregnancy and how sick your grandmother was. Mariana's baby was stillborn. And not mine. It belonged to the local fisherman's son, the man she'd been in love with. She was honest about that. For all her faults, she didn't want me to grieve what had never been mine, even though I still did. For her. I didn't love her, but I cared about her, and she was hurt. Gemma, meanwhile, gave birth to a baby girl. Ice trickled down Nate's spine along with a healthy dose of foreboding. Next to him, Chris sat still as a statue.
The problem?
Gemma said quietly, apparently resigned to the fact that the truth was going to come out no matter what.
Was Ernesto and I never consummated our marriage? He had chronic diabetes and it affected his performance. I hid my pregnancy the first few months, but when it reached the point where I could no longer hide it, I convinced him I had to return home to help take care of my mom, who by then was so sick she couldn't walk. Your father had hired a full-time nurse for her, but Ernesto didn't know that. He agreed, and he had no desire to care for my family, so he didn't accompany me. I didn't tell anyone about Ernesto's impotency or my pregnancy except Roger, because he deserved to know. It was his child. And Mariana, when we...
She trailed off. When we convinced her to take the baby girl as her own, Roger finished with a grim expression. He looked at Chris, the lines of his face both harsh and sad beneath the fluorescent lights. The baby girl was you. Gemma is your real mom. Chapter 26. Neither Chris nor Nate spoke during the ride home. Roger had tried to convince Chris to return to their house in Beverly Hills, but she'd refused. Nate didn't blame her. This entire night had been... damn. Now he knew what it felt like to be on the set of a soap opera. Except this was reality, not television. Do you want something to eat? He asked, flipping on the lights when they entered his house. It was late, and judging by the silence, both his father and Skylar were already asleep. You didn't touch your dinner. Neither had Nate. Jim and Roger's revelations had already been too much to swallow. Once Roger dropped the bombshell with a capital B about Gemma being Chris's real mom, the rest of the story unraveled real quick. Mariana had agreed to raise Chris as her own because Gemma couldn't bring the baby, aka Chris, back to Ernesto. Luckily, no one had been around to witness the actual births, which came within a week of each other, except for Roger and the midwife whom they'd paid off. They also paid someone to fix the paperwork so it said Chris was Mariana's daughter. Mariana and Gemma's mother got to hold her granddaughter before she passed away a few weeks later, and after the funeral, Gemma returned home to Ernesto while Roger and Mariana moved to the U.S. Unfortunately, the midwife blabbed, despite her payoff, and her husband happened to be one of the officials in Ernesto's pocket. He told Ernesto, who flipped out on Gemma, nearly killing her, and that was when she ran off to her cousins and faked her death. She'd used the entirety of her savings to create a new identity and worked as a chambermaid in a hotel in Quezon, selling her art on the side until she earned enough to immigrate to Canada. By then, Ernesto had died of diabetes complications, and Gemma worked up the courage to reach out to Mariana. Mariana had taken the next flight out to meet Gemma in Toronto, without telling Roger. That had been the night she'd abandoned her husband and the niece she'd promised to raise as her own daughter. It had been an emotional reunion between the sisters, one filled with tears, both happy and angry. Based on what Gemma said, Mariana gave no indication she would return to Seattle. She had, however, promised her sister she wouldn't tell Roger about seeing her. Gemma hadn't wanted to upend his and Chris's lives with her sudden resurrection from the dead, and that she would send Gemma frequent photos and updates about Chris. Except Mariana hadn't returned home, and the last communication she'd sent Gemma had been a letter informing her she'd spilled the truth to Roger, that he wanted nothing to do with Gemma because of her lies, and that he'd insisted Mariana cut off all contact with her sister. He'd allegedly said they already had a happy family of three, and he didn't want Gemma to ruin it. A heartbroken Gemma had stayed away, per his wishes, except Roger swore he'd said no such thing, and that he'd had no idea Gemma was alive. The entire story was so far-fetched, Nate actually believed it. Plus, he'd seen the look on Roger's face when he spotted Gemma at the cafe. No one, not even the best actor in the world, could fake that kind of shock. "I'm not hungry," Chris said, more withdrawn than Nate had ever seen her. Spikes of pain prickled his skin. He hated seeing her like this. "Just a sandwich," he persuaded. "You'll be starving in the morning."
"No, I'm fine, but eat. You didn't touch your dinner either."
Nate cupped her face with his hands, forcing her to look at him. "If you eat, I eat. You don't eat, I don't eat." Her eyes narrowed, and he saw a flash of normal Chris.
"That's emotional blackmail."
"Is it?" He thought about it. "Seems romantic to me. Or maybe I'm watching the wrong kind of romantic movies."
"Fine. Let's both not eat."
"Okay." They made it to the third stair of the staircase before Chris huffed, turned around, and marched him into the kitchen.
"One sandwich, that's it."
His mouth tipped up. "You got it." They worked in silence, Nate arranging the focaccia bread, pesto, ham, and cheese, Chris pouring the water and setting the table with plates and napkins. He waited until she bit into her sandwich before he dug into his own.
"This is amazing," Chris murmured after a few bites.
Nate's chest puffed with pride. "Glad you think so, because it's the only sandwich I know how to make besides PB&J.
There's a big gap between PB&J and focaccia pesto.
It's about commitment. If you're going to